Get a jump start on 2024 in a new Kia from Robert Brogdon's Olathe Kia. Shop their large selection, including the new Sorento, Niro, and Soul models. You'll score big with low prices, trade assist cash, and a 30-day money-back guarantee. Visit OlatheKia.com.
Pack your bags, start the car, and get on the road. It's time to go across the country 2 minutes at a time for the biggest stories of the day, where they're happening.
Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
Indianapolis, Indiana.
Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
Cleveland, Ohio.
Boston, Mass.
Miami, Florida.
It's the 2 minute drill on the program.
This is Jack Johnson filling in for Seren Petra on the program on Sports Radio 810 WHB. And it's time for the 2 minute drill. And it's brought to you by Big O Tires. No matter what kind of car you drive, all cars need maintenance and all tires need changing. Go to BigOTires.com now to make an appointment at one of their 13 locally owned locations. We jump on the phone lines and head to Boston and type with Mike Cadlick of WEEI. Mike, thanks for coming on the show today.
Yeah, you got it, Jack. How you doing?
Pretty good over here, but I want to know a little bit more from your side about Drew Holiday getting a four-year, $135 million deal from the Celtics. What can you make of that and how he's going to fit into the rotation?
Yeah, I mean, they needed to make a splash, obviously, earlier in the offseason. They did so by trading for Holiday. He was on a contract year, and now you keep him around for the long term. I think it's huge for the centerpiece of this team. He's the one guy with championship pedigree, with championship experience. So you go into this playoff run, you need guys like Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum. You need them to look towards somebody, and now that's Drew Holiday. And if he wasn't signed for the long term, they could look at him and say, you know what, he's going to be here just for the rest of the year. He doesn't, you know, he's not going to be with us for the long term. Now he is, so now he's the guy that's sort of North Star, if you will, on that team. So I think it was good for them, a good re-signing that Brad Stevens made happen. Brad Stevens has kicked butt since he took over as the GM. So all is good right now for the Celtics over here.
And hopping over to baseball, the Red Sox have one of the best rotations in all of baseball. ERAs look great. They've been dominant in that aspect. But offensively, they lose Trevor Story for the season. Yep. He's going to have surgery on his shoulder. Can the Red Sox lineup still produce at a top 10 level without their shortstop?
Yeah, it's going to be tough, but they've done it in the last couple of years, right? When they signed Story, that big deal, he's really only played, I don't think he's played a full season, but he's been hurt for the majority of the last two, so you lose him again for this one. They've made do in the lineup. Their problem has been the pitching for the last three, four, even 5 years since they won the World Series.
Mm-hmm.
So lineup should be able to make it happen, I think. Pitching, like you said, has been solid so far, but they've hit a little bit of a divot here so far in the season once they came home after their road trip. So we'll see what goes on there. But no, I think the guys like Rafi Devers, Tristan Cassis, Jaron Duran, they're getting on base, they're making it happen. So I think that'll continue. It's going to just, again, if the Sox want to make another run, it's going to rely on the pitching once again.
That's such a tough task competing in the American League East when you got teams like Baltimore and New York playing the way they are right now.
Yep.
Now I want to jump to football. Tom Brady actually mentioned on the podcast he was on, he might be down for a comeback, comparing it to Jordan and the Wizards. Are you telling me this is real or was he joking?
I think it's him playing, you know, having some fun, playing some games on that. Well, he was getting like a haircut or something, right, on the podcast. So it didn't seem anything too serious. But you never know. I mean, we know that Brady is the most competitive, not just football player, but athlete we've seen in the last 50 to 100, I mean, really of all time, right? It's Tom Brady. So I would never say never. I've really never said never with this guy. We were talking about it today on one of our podcasts over at WEEI about how, you know, they're doing this whole Tom Brady Hall of Fame thing at Gillette Stadium this summer. What if instead of retiring his number and doing that whole thing, they just sign him to one last one-year contract and let him play it out? Patriots draft Drake May. Tom Brady's the mentor. It all works out great and fine and dandy. But realistically, I don't see it happening. I think he's thinking about it. Like I said, he's competitive, but ultimately I don't think he's coming back to football.
Well, Tom has duped us before a couple times with that retirement comeback or not, but I guess we will see. Thanks so much for your time, Mike.
Yeah, you got it. Have a good one. Have a good weekend.
To the arms of Florida.
Now we head down to Jacksonville to talk with Ryan Green of 1010XL. Ryan, thanks for coming on the show this afternoon.
Hey, Jack, how are you, man?
Hey, we're doing pretty good up here, but I'm sure you're doing even better after Josh Allen signed a five-year deal, $150 million, to stay on that Jags defense. What's the feel down there, and how good can this defense be in 2024 with him as that centerpiece?
Yeah, it was an enormous deal. It was one the fan base was waiting for. Some feel it was a couple of months too late, but I'm of the mindset at least they got it done. He is now the franchise defensive guy. Obviously not the franchise guy. That's Trevor Lawrence. So when you talk about the defense, it is going to revolve around Josh Allen. Underrated player nationally, a guy that had 17 and a half sacks last year and didn't get one vote for defensive player of the year. And he talked about that at his press conference. Using that as motivation, he's now happy. He's got a brand new contract. And with the addition of Eric Armstead on that D-line, all of a sudden now, Trayvon Walker, Eric Armstead, Josh Allen, that's not a bad trio to have up front.
You brought up Trevor Lawrence, you know, being that franchise piece, and it's easy when you're the quarterback, but he's coming to the end of that contract he's got in Jacksonville. Should we expect an extension this offseason?
I think there's definitely a possibility of that. I mean, look, when did Herbert get extended? He got extended right before year four, I think close to training camp. Same thing with Joe Burrow. So I don't know if I would expect one in the coming days or weeks. But if you go by the Burrow timeline, by the Herbert timeline, maybe sometime in August, maybe sometime in July, right as training camp opens. And the thing with Josh Allen, it was a mega deal. But they actually opened up a lot of cap room for 2024. So I don't know if they have their eyes set on a Trevor extension this year. Perhaps they may do something else, maybe bring in another wide receiver via trade. But all of a sudden, the Jaguars now have about $20 million of cap room to play with coming into the 2024 season.
One question, Ryan, with those extensions, you mentioned Josh Allen's. His sort of brings his immediate cap number down a bit. We'd expect something similar with the Trevor Lawrence deal. How much does that put pressure on their coach, who was a Andy Reid guy, and his name's slipping my mind right now, won a title, of course, in Philly. Their head coach.
Doug Peterson.
Doug Peterson, thank you. But while, you know, Josh Allen is cheap for the next year, a couple years with the beginning of this new deal, Trevor Lawrence, as he'll be a little cheaper once they sign him. But now they've got about 2 or 3 years left of that cheap quarterback window to make a real push in the playoffs. Is Peterson going to start feeling that heat?
I think Trent Baalke, the GM, will feel the heat before Doug Peterson. They may go out together if 2024 doesn't go well. But look at what they did in free agency. They brought in three guys 30-plus years of age, and Ronald Darby and Eric Armstead and Mitch Morse. Why do you do that? Well, I think you do that because you know you probably need to win in 2024. They didn't go for the young guys. They went for the proven guys. So I think Trent Baalke is going to feel the heat a little bit. And could they be a combo deal, go out together? Yeah, potentially. But I think Baalke is probably on a hot seat entering 24. I'm not necessarily sure if Doug Peterson is.
Ryan, I want to jump over to the college football side of things. Greedy Vance Jr. transferring from Florida State after starting in all 14 games last season. From your point of view, what happened?
Yeah, look, there's a lot of change at Florida State. You know, he's like the 19th guy, I think you would call him, playmakers, difference makers on that roster from last year. Some left to the NFL draft, some left to the transfer portal. It's going to be an interesting year for Mike Norvell and Florida State coming off a 13-0 season, of which they got left out of the playoff. I don't even count the Orange Bowl. That was the junior varsity version of Florida State. They had like 50 guys dressed for that game. They were 13-0 in the games that counted. But a lot of those guys are gone. A lot of those guys are going to be drafted in 2 weeks. How will they respond? Will the young guys be able to emerge? DJ Uiagalelei is here now as the quarterback. So a lot of change in Tallahassee, but Mike Norvell with that brand new contract extension, he has absolutely no pressure on him heading into 2024.
It's certainly a wild time in college sports with the transfer portal, and it really just seems never ending. Ryan, thanks so much for your time.
Hey, guys, anytime. Have a great weekend.
In San Francisco.
Going to the Bay Area to talk with Roxy Bernstein of 95.7 The Game, ESPN, ESPN Radio, and the Pac-12 Network. Roxy, thanks for hopping on the show today.
My pleasure as always.
So the Golden State Warriors right now are locked into the play-in tournament, and we know about this postseason success. What do you think the chances are right now for a playoff run?
I think it's possible. The good news for the Warriors is they're as healthy as they've been all year. And they've dealt with injuries just like everybody else. Andrew Wiggins has been in and out of the lineup. Draymond clearly has had his issues to deal with, both on and off the floor this year. But I think they're poised. They're playing their best ball. They're coming off a big win in L.A. They figured out how to win on the road, which was a problem for them last year. And so here they are. They still have a chance to even climb higher on the ladder in the Western Conference. They're going to be in a playoff game or in a play-in game. It just depends on what spot. And it behooved them to finish in 7 or 8 because then the less you have to play to get in and make sure you're in a playoff series with somebody.
Jumping over to women's college sports, Tara Vanderveer is retiring after 40 seasons as the Stanford's women's basketball coach. What can you speak about with the legacy and maybe where Stanford goes next?
She's amazing. Well, what she's done in the history, you think about it, the most wins ever in the history of college basketball, which will be eclipsed coming up soon. But to put that run together, the consistency, the longevity, at a place like Stanford is pretty remarkable. And I don't think it can be overlooked when you talk about the greatest coach in the history of college basketball. And certainly people point on the men's side to Mike Krzyzewski and on and on. But on the women's side, it's Gino Auriemma and it's Tara Vanderveer. And those two, just the success that they've had over the years is remarkable. And Stanford had a succession plan laid in place. Kate Pay, who was her top assistant, was the coach in waiting at Stanford. She's going to take over. And they're hoping that it just is a smooth transition if Stanford continues to do what they've been doing and dominate in the West Coast in women's college basketball.
So with having a succession plan in place, did Stanford, did the powers that be and the you know, next in line, did everybody know it was going to be this year, or did they just know it was going to be soon?
No, I think they were going on the assumption it was year to year with Tara. That, look, she's 7 years old. At some point, the run was going to end. They just didn't know when. And I think that was part of the enticement to keep Kate Pay at Stanford and from her not taking other coaching jobs is to have that dangling carrot for her. That this is going to be your program at some point. We don't know when it's going to happen, but it's going to be yours. And I think that's part of it. She played for Tara at Stanford, so that played into it also. But as far as it goes, in terms of the plan that Tara had, I don't think anybody knew. I think this was she came to this realization maybe a few weeks ago that, you know what, this is it. And to be honest with you, I think that Stanford going to the ACC probably had something to do with it. With the travel that's coming up and just the logistical nightmare I think that's approaching for both Cal and Stanford, that probably added to Tara Vanderveer hanging it up now.
Jumping over to the NFL, now we are under 2 weeks away from the NFL draft. With the pulse you have on the team right now, what do you expect the 49ers to go to in the draft?
My gut says either offensive line or defense. That's where they have a need right now more than anything. Sure, could they use some more depth at tight end because George Kittle's starting to age? Yeah, I think that's possible. Could they try to add more depth and bring another running back into the mix behind Christian McCaffrey? Yeah, I think that's possible. But the more pressing need for the 49ers is help on the offensive line because I think that was exposed by the Chiefs in the Super Bowl. And plus, with a lot of turnover on the defensive line, Eric Armstead's gone. You're losing Chase Young, who came in midseason. So I think the 49ers, those are two areas. And potentially linebacker, considering the injuries they're dealing with a linebacker also.
Well, we know the Niners are going to be another favorite in the NFC side of things. Roxy, thanks so much for your time as always.
My pleasure.
That's right. We are heading up to Detroit to talk with Will Birchfield of 97.1 The Ticket and Fox 2 Television. Will, how are we doing this afternoon?
Doing great, guys. Happy Friday. Thanks for having me on.
Anytime. And I want to go over the Lions right now, but more specifically, Jared Goff, who said recently on a podcast that Detroit media is too negative because the franchise was so bad for so long. Where do you fall on that argument from your quarterback?
I think Jared would have had a stronger argument a year and a half ago, 2 years ago. I think part of that is informed by the fact that when he got here, pretty much everyone in town, fans and media included, deemed him a bridge quarterback who wasn't the long-term answer, who was clearly washed up, who wasn't good enough for Sean McVay, so how could he be good enough for anybody else? And he was widely dismissed by this town, really for his first season. But in the two seasons since, I think Detroit, again, fans and media alike, have embraced the idea of Jared Goff as the Lions' long-term quarterback, and more than that, have embraced the idea of the Lions as legitimate contenders in the NFC. So I think Jared might be referring more to 2021 than 2022 and 2023. But certainly he is a quarterback who has always been fueled by critics and skeptics and doubters. And if he needs to create the idea that he is still being doubted here for a further chip on his shoulder, then he has every right to do that.
Now, he did add that he hopes to work out a long-term deal in Detroit, and we know this is a quarterback league, and you should never take a good quarterback for granted. So if an extension is going to happen, Will, when would you expect that?
Yeah, and I think that's well said. I think at this point it is when, not if. And I wouldn't be surprised to see something come down in training camp. I think if you look back at the most recent extensions given out to you know, multi-hundred-million-dollar quarterbacks, those have mostly happened much later in the offseason, closer to the season than the end of the previous season. So it wouldn't surprise me to see a deal come down in training camp. And I think the deal, from a monetary value per year, will come as a shock to a lot of NFL fans and maybe even media. I think Jared Goff is in line to command a deal worth upwards of $50 million per year. But consider the cap is rising rapidly. He has played, like, indisputably one of the five best quarterbacks in the NFL for the past two seasons, and he's a Lions guy, and that's kind of the market right now for quarterback play. So I fully expect that to get done, and when it does, I think $45 million per year is the floor for what Jared Goff will get.
Kind of jump into a different sport real quick here, Will, but it's something that just occurred to me and I wanted to touch base because it's a sport that's very unfamiliar in this part of the country. The Wolverines hockey team unseeded or going into the tournament but did make a surprising run to the Frozen Four. They fell to Boston College. I'm just curious, like, college hockey, a state I always think of as Minnesota. But I'm always curious with these sort of niche sports, how big of a deal is that up there? Is it just big when they're making their run in the tournament, or is that a big, big deal up there in Ann Arbor?
It's definitely a big deal in Ann Arbor. They take their hockey very seriously there. The interest outside of Ann Arbor probably isn't as high as it would be in a state like Minnesota, the state of hockey, maybe even a state like Wisconsin, where there are only so many, I guess, professional teams. But in Detroit right now, the Wings are in the middle of a frantic playoff race and trying to make the postseason for the first time in 7 years. So I think that has kind of captured most of the fans' imagination. So I will say, as a proud Boston College graduate myself, I was pretty thrilled to see the Eagles take down the Wolverines last night in convincing fashion and fully expect them to take care of business tomorrow against UD.
I want to jump over to the baseball side of things real quick because Kansas City, AL Central, also shared with the Detroit Tigers, who are now 7-4 and third in the division. They're home tonight for the Minnesota Twins. So far, has the season met the expectations set for Detroit?
I would say it's exceeded the expectations for Detroit. I think most fans would have assumed that this team would be 4-7 right now, not 7-4. And based on the way the offense has performed, they probably should be 4-7. But their bullpen has been elite, and that was part of the construction of this team. And the pitching staff, from a rotation standpoint, has held up pretty well itself. So this is a team that, with 85 to 86 wins, could very well win a very weak AL Central. That seems to kind of be the target in this division. So as long as the Tigers keep playing close to and slightly above 500 baseball, I think they'll have a chance to win this really poor AL Central. So, so far, so good for Detroit. It's going to be a question, really, of whether or not their young hitter, Spencer Torkelson, a former first overall pick, Riley Green, former fifth overall pick, can find their stride. If they do, they can certainly contend this season.
And last question for you here, Will. I'm a big Jersey fanatic, so I got to know, how are the fans reacting to the Lions' plans of changing their jerseys?
They're psyched. Any time you introduce a new jersey around here, fans get pretty fired up. On the topic of the fanatic jerseys, you may have seen a couple days ago, Riley Green of the Tigers had his entire pant leg rip in half. So I think we need to address things on the baseball side. But fans here are pretty fired up. I actually had a chance yesterday to speak with Lions president Rod Wood, who said he thinks these will be one of the great uniforms in the NFL. So fans are eagerly awaiting the unveiling next week.
Will, thanks so much for your time as always, and we'll talk to you next time.
Thanks a lot, guys. Appreciate it.
All right, the Joe's Kansas City Barbecue burnt end of the hour answer. Two pitchers have won at least 20 career games for both the Royals and Mets. I asked for either one. And they are both pitchers of note for the Royals franchise.
I believe one of them started against the Mets in the World Series, didn't he?
Nope.
Oh.
It's got to be old, right?
Mm-hmm. Oldish.
I guess I'm thinking Volquez never played for the Mets?
I didn't win 20 games.
Oh, okay.
Vargas did, but he wasn't a 20-game winner.
No, I don't think Vargas pitched for the Mets either.
I swear.
No, I don't mean a 20-win season. I mean 20 career games.
Oh, 20 career games.
Only two guys that have 20 career games.
Oh, my God.
Have won at least 20 career games for both franchises.
I might be stumped here.
Both won Cy Youngs as Royals. Brett Saberhagen.
I was going to say Sabes.
He won 110 for the Royals and 29 for the Mets. And the other, he was a guy for a Met first and came to the Royals. Actually, he was a Royal draft pick, went to the Mets in a horrible trade, then came back to the Royals. David Cone won 27 games for the Royals. And
I overthought that. I was thinking way too recent. I just completely blocked out anything pre-2000s.
Yeah. The Cy Young hint was pretty good because you can just go, okay, well, I know what three have won. Zach Greinke wasn't a Met. Boom, now I know who it was.
Yep. Yeah. You can narrow that down pretty
Sabes
good.
Sabes and Cone. Similar question coming at the end of this hour.
Did Jason Vargas really not? I swear I thought I remember him for a brief point in time at the Mets.
He definitely did not win.
Because I'm thinking about that 2017 year. He won like 17 games. For the Royals, so he just needed a couple.
He did pitch for the Mets.
Did he win anything?
See how many games he won for each. I'm guessing he won 20 total with the Royals. He won 34 games with the Royals and only 13 for the Mets. Mm. Yeah, he was a Mets. He left the Royals. And went
to say it was after.
In 18 and 19.
It's a really bad time for the Mets, I think, too. Or they underachieving team. Well, I'm glad you brought up Joe's, though, because now I'm hungry. I didn't eat, and now I'm thinking about brisket.
Joe's Kansas City Barbecue. Mm. Olathe, Leawood.
The fries as well.
This is Friday. Tomorrow is absolutely Joe's Day.
It's been
a little while since I've been, so
it's been too long.
Burn ends and some rings.
You know what my buddy and I did during the Final Four? Mm. We did burn ends, naturally Joe's, but we got our burn ends, but then we went somewhere else and got one of those baked, I think he went to Costco or something and got a baked mac and cheese.
Oh.
Made some burn-in mac and cheese with the Joe's.
That's the move.
We got the so Costco good. Mac and cheese, and you got to get legit mac and cheese. Like, I'm a little snobby when it comes to mac and cheese. I like the stringy cheese.
The stringy,
yeah, I love it. And then those Joe's burn-ins with the Joe's sauce to top it is good.
Do you remember when you used to be able to bring barbecue into Kaufman?
Did that so much.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I was going to say, I haven't tried it in a while, but I may now. I mean, come on. Walk in there with a couple pounds of brisket and some sides.
And the dirty rice.
Yes.
I freaking love the dirty
rice. That man,
it's got
Curtis,
a little bit of a kick to it, but it's just
it's amazing. Just right.
Yeah.
This was before,
all their sides are wonderful.
This was before I started working here. And the only thing that I'd ever gotten as a side there were the fries, which, of course, they're incredible. And as Curtis said, so are all their sides. But I was just listening to the program as a fan, and Curtis would always talk up the dirty rice. Mm. And I was like, all right, I'm going to give that a shot. It's just...
changes your life.
Perfect.
And the gumbo. I mean, Anything that they introduce, it's like it's going to be good because
I've never had a bad experience.
But like the Rocket Pig is a life changer.
It is.
I mean, best, most perfectly blended sandwich that I've ever tasted.
They could throw just about anything on a sandwich and they could work.
Yes.
Come up with a name.
I'm a big texture guy.
Yeah.
I mean, the taste, of course, is incredible. Everything tastes great at Joe's, but the texture of that Rocket Pig, their pulled pork, I mean, really all their meats are amazing, but I can't explain it because, you know, sometimes you have meat that's too dry. And and sometimes you have meat that feels like they've been keeping it warm. It's sitting in warm water for God knows how long.
Yeah.
You don't get either of that with Joe's. The texture of that Rocket Pig
perfect. And because the taste buds, pick things very, you get the little flow. You get immediately the sweet, the smoke, and then at the end there's the kick from the jalapenos at the end. If you don't know, and more people know, if you don't know, just check it out.
You need to know now.
Just check it out.
So. I've been around the Midwest enough. I've tried a lot of Texas barbecue. I actually, in the last year, had Memphis barbecue. I'd heard all about that and kind of the sweetness of it. I can't. And it's biased. It's biased, because I've got a lot of Texas friends that are like, no, it's Texas barbecue is the best. I'm like, you haven't changed my mind, mainly because we got places like Joe's.
Yes.
It's absolutely that good. But I do wonder about the barbecue in Kentucky. They seem to be
the barbecuing.
The barbecuing
that they
going
were trying
on.
To do with to get a head coach. You know, I think it's not, it wouldn't have been at the outset, hey, let's go get Mark Pope.
Yeah.
But given where they were at this time yesterday, not a bad fallback when the names you really wanted were gone or turning you down. To get a guy who is an alum, a captain, a legacy there from that respect, who isn't just, he's back because he's a Kentucky guy. He's a guy who went to BYU, turned them into a good program.
Yep.
Tournament team this year, play an exciting brand of basketball.
Beat KU and Lawrence this year.
Offensive, good, really good offensive team. You got to be good on offense. We talked about last week that the top three teams in offensive efficiency were in the Final Four: UConn, Alabama, and Purdue. So a team that looks like has a style of basketball that can be successful. And now he can go to Kentucky and get a higher talent. I think this is a low key, a pretty damn good hiring by Kentucky, given where they were setting a day ago.
I come back to this, though, there's got to be a reason that it fell to Mark Pope. And if you are a program like Kentucky, in theory, you should be able to do what it takes to land your top choice. Now, it could just be, look, Nate Oates loves where he is. Scott Drew loves where he is. There's all these reasons why any individual guy would tell you no. But when you get told no by multiple guys and you're a place like Kentucky, I also think, and look, if this works out, and if in 10 years we're talking about Mark Pope with three Final Fours and a championship, then we're all going, who cares how they landed on Mark Pope? Mm-hmm. He's great. But I do think you do have to look yourself in the mirror if you're Mitch Barnhart, their AD, and the money guys at Kentucky, the money people at Kentucky, and go, okay, but how do we wind up here? What are we doing wrong? And what can we do to maximize our support of Pope to make sure he has all the resources that other coaches who turned us down thought they maybe wouldn't have here?
Well, one of the coaches that turned them down, in essence, was John Calipari.
He
was the first guy to go, so to move to Arkansas. And then the guys who followed him just turned down taking over the job he left, but that's where it began. And so that was a program that you would think Kentucky fans think it would be. I can't imagine any Kentucky fan thought the Calipari would leave them and go to Arkansas. So that should have been, that's the wake-up call in the first place that he even left.
Well, I think also, too, you look at the candidates they had and how we thought going into this coaching search, it's like Kentucky can get whoever the hell they want. They have the money. They are one of the biggest brands. And I think, are they the leading in NIL money? I think they have to be one or two. Like, they've got unlimited amount of resources. Yeah. And I almost
get it or spend it or not.
Yeah. And I wonder if guys like, so Dan Hurley, he's now a two-time champion at UConn. If you go, I'm going to be the focus at UConn alongside, you know, UConn women's basketball. I mean, basketball's everything in UConn. The football program, they had Jim Mora for a little bit, and Jim Mora had him, I think, at 6 wins after like a 2-win season, but they're never going to compete with UConn basketball. And I think in Kentucky, a little bit, you know, Mark Stoops has some pull, and so that might have bugged Calipari a little bit. And I think for the other coaches looking at Kentucky, they're going, man, you know, that is a hard bar to reach, I guess I would say, of what Calipari did. And toward the end, underachieved a little bit, but constantly. 21 seasons, Final Fours, 31 seasons. He won a national championship. You look at Scott Drew. And Scott Drew did win a championship at Baylor, but he's going, I could go to Kentucky, and immediately from day one, I am put under the spotlight. I have to get to the second weekend of the tournament. Where at Baylor, he didn't make it this year, and we're already moving on from. We don't really talk about it. Mm-hmm. I think that was the pressure of why everybody was saying, no. Dan Hurley's like, no, I don't want to go there. Scott Drew said, no, I don't want to go there. Billy Donovan was kind of rumored for a little bit. I don't think he seriously ever wanted the job, but he was like, I'm going to stay in the NBA. I'm not going. Because Kentucky, it just has this immense level of expectation. And even toward the end, people were wearing bags on their heads and like, get rid of Calipari. And it's like, man, he won 20-plus games, and they're still like, no, not the guy for us. That has to be something those coaches are considering compared to where they're at now. At Baylor, Scott Drew never has to worry about people showing up and putting bags over their heads.
And there are two. You mentioned Scott Drew and Dan Hurley. The two things they have that they wouldn't have when they go to Kentucky, where they are now, Scott Drew has a national championship.
Yep.
Dan Hurley has two national championships. The minute they go to Kentucky, that's history. Kentucky didn't care that he won two national championships at UConn. They don't care that Scott Drew won a national championship at Baylor. What have you done for us? So whatever sway, whatever comfort or you know, resume they have, whatever that mattered to the fan base they're currently at, it means nothing. So you have to then go out and achieve again. Dan Hurley doesn't win a title for the next 3 or 4 years. He's not going to be run out of town by UConn because he won 2-4.
Back to back.
Same thing for Scott Drew. If they go to Kentucky and do that, what a waste of money and time this was. You come to Kentucky after winning 2 titles, you don't do anything. That's a major factor in whether or not you'd go to a place like Kentucky, because they are absolutely one of the top shelf blue bloods, the Mount Rushmore, whatever you want to call it. But their fans are almost beyond that. Mm-hmm. If there isn't a Final Four every year, it's, you know, there are problems. And as much as I said, you know, Calipari kind of turned them down to an extent, it was also a reset the shot clock thing for him, too. And maybe he felt like he couldn't get that done there anymore. And well, if I go somewhere else, there isn't as much expectation, although there probably is a little bit more expectation for Arkansas than maybe their recent history should demand. But he's going to get a little bit of time there where he was out of time. The people in Lexington want titles. They want Final Fours every year. When it didn't happen, they're out for blood. And anybody who goes there, no matter what your resume is, means nothing. You got to win there.
I think another thing that the people who need to be paying attention to this are the ADs at North Carolina, Duke, Kansas, and in football, Alabama, who just got their guy. But, I mean, Michigan, Ohio State. If you are an AD at a place that has a top-shelf blue blood program, especially in one of the main revenue sports like men's basketball or football, you need to be sitting there going, okay, this is no longer the era of, hey, we're the top stepping stone, and anybody we want will say yes to us if our guy leaves. If Self retires soon, if Hubert Davis, who did get a one seed this year but missed the tournament last year, if Hubert Davis doesn't work out in Chapel Hill, if Shire doesn't work out in Duke or decides to go to the NBA, whatever the case may be, all these ADs need to be thinking, okay, you know, and like I said, even the football schools, those ADs need to be going, okay, clearly something about the landscape has changed, and more coaches from non-blue blood programs are willing to turn down blue blood jobs that in the past would have been dream jobs that anybody would have said yes to. What do we need to change to keep ourselves the most attractive job possible?
It is an interesting point with this Kentucky job, and Kay brought up, you know, Mark Pope kind of underrated a really good hire there considering what he took over at BYU. I will say this, and I'm curious of both your guys' thoughts, because Mark Pope had the ties to Kentucky, right? And I feel like a large part of the fan base goes, I can be okay with this because he's a Wildcat. At heart, he's a Kentucky Wildcat. I remember, it was a very brief point in time, but kind of remember after Kansas won the national championship in 2008, like Danny Manning was still on the staff, and it was like, if Bill Self left for whatever reason, like, I hope they give Danny Manning a call because he's a legend at KU. Then he was a head coach. It didn't really work out. And I wonder, the fear of it is, if Mark Pope doesn't work out, does that just tarnish his image as a player?
No, because as much as I pointed out the fact that he is was a captain on a national championship team,
yep.
he was never like, he isn't considered Kentucky royalty,
yep.
Like Danny Manning. Danny Manning was a national player of the year, Final Four, most outstanding player. If Jamal Mashburn or Anthony Davis, a player that had achieved massive success as a player and was a league guy, goes back, I think that's a little different situation. Mark Pope, I think, is kind of in a good spot because he does have the tie. He does have the roots there, but he's not a guy that I think that he is going to face a lot of pressure or would be a situation like you're talking about where they wouldn't want to fire him or it would tarnish his legacy. He would just be another coach that didn't work out.
Yeah, he's going to have immense expectations in year one. And we might talk a little bit more college basketball when we come back and wrap up hour number three of the program on Sports Radio 810 WHB. We are wrapping up hour number three of the program on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
It's a very non-aggressive song.
You've had some pretty good bumpers coming back here, Adam. I like it.
That's a good musical sense. Who is that, by the way?
This is Modern Jesus by Portugal the Man.
I've heard of that.
You could have made up both of those, and I wouldn't have been able to prove you wrong.
You should start doing that and just say, is it true or false, that whoever you played, if we don't recognize the song, you can make up an artist, or you can say who it actually is.
Correct by name and the title of the song. I do want to give a shout-out. The bumper I had the first coming back from the first break during Danny's segment was the band is called the Joel Plaskett Emergency, which is a really fun band from Canada, so check them out.
So that was the song was?
The name of that song that I just played coming back from this break is Modern Jesus, and the band is Portugal the Man.
So the name of that song could have been Portugal the Man by Modern Jesus.
Yeah.
And both are equally believable to someone who's 57.
By the way, the song I'm referencing earlier, Joel Plaskett Emergency, Fashionable People, the name of the title of the song kept.
That could be a title of a song or a band.
I know that you're a big music guy, and this is such a weird poll to say right now, but the on Netflix they had The Dirt, the Motley Crue, with the actors in it, not like an actual documentary. It's like one of those, you haven't seen that yet. Okay, well, it kind of goes into like how they got their name, and I can't remember which ones they're doing. They're just like writing down on their whiteboard on how they got to it. And I've always wondered with those, like what the Joe Plaschke and the Emergency,
sometimes
how does that come to be? Name,
yeah. So and sometimes it morphs over time. I mean, the Beatles were the Silver Beatles, and they were the something else, and then they were the Beatles, and then it's bands change names over time. So sometimes the history of a name is.
It's fascinating to me. Like it can be easy, Dave Matthews Band.
Some stories are just like, we were sitting around one night, and one of the roadies went, "You should call the band blank," and that happens, and it sticks.
Stuck.
And you're like, "Okay."
There's a fun, really fun.
What's the big story? Oh, nothing.
Nothing. No. Somebody shouted it, and we took it.
Bubba just said, "Hey, call them this."
There's a really fun band on the local scene for a while that I loved in high school. They toured a lot with a band that Bucati really loves called Pomeroy. But this band was called Anything But Joey, and the reason they came up with that name is in high school they were thinking up band names, and for whatever one reason or another, people kept suggesting something involving the name Joey, and finally one of them got fed up and they said Anything But Joey.
And that sticks.
The band name.
I wonder when the light bulb goes off.
Some bands try
Sounds
to be
good.
Think, maybe a little too cute with it. It's like you do want. You want to get some attention, but you also don't want a name that's just so bizarre that people are like, "I'm not going to say that."
I'm
not going to repeat
Pistols.
That 15 times. Yeah, but that's not that's easy to remember.
That's easy to remember, and it stands out.
Some of the ones you're just like, I don't know why they thought that would ever work, but You know what? If you create a good product, people don't really care what you're called.
I was going to say, in sports too, we all got those nicknames all the time, but it almost never comes from the players. Some guys can name themselves like Deion Sanders, Prime Time, and it sticks. Others, they've tried it and they failed.
Don't give yourself a nickname.
Yeah, unless you are Deion Sanders.
Yeah, even that, Deion. You know, I saw another athletic feature on the larger than life coach and blah blah blah. I'm like, is that the most overhyped 3-win? Improvement in the history of college football?
Well, they're going to keep selling it. That's for sure. They're getting the ratings.
They went from 1-9 in conference to 1-9, or 1-8 in conference to 1-8 in conference,
and didn't win a lot toward the end. Not even close.
He's everywhere. Meanwhile, yeah. Lance Leipold, in near obscurity until recently, has gone from 2 wins to 6 to 9,
and now Big 12 title hopes.
No features on Lance Leipold.
Nope. All right, that is for hour number 3 on the program. Hour number 4 coming your way next.
All right, 2 men have played at least 300 career games for both the Royals and Mets. Name either one. Brought to you by Good Sense.